Vate Vasudevaya, Vate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the fifth canto.
So we're reading from
chapter 2. The fifth canto described the dynasty of Priyavrata Maharaj. Chapter 2 is called the activities of Maharaj Agnidra, which is Priyavrata's first son. So there's one text, it's not on the board, so I'll just give the intro and then we'll go to text 1. In this chapter, the character of Maharaj Agnidra is described. When Maharaj Priyavrata went off for spiritual realization, his son Agnidra became the ruler of Jambudweep. In accordance with Maharaj Priyavrata's instructions, and maintained its residence with the same affection a father feels for his son. Once, Maharaj Agnidra desired to have his son, and therefore he entered a cave of Mandara Mountain to practice austerity. Understanding his desire, Lord Brahma sent a celestial girl named Purvachiti to Agnidra's hermitage. After dressing herself very attractively, she presented herself before him with various feminine movements, and Agnidra was naturally attracted to her. The girl's actions, expression, smile, sweet words, and moving eyes were fascinating to him. Agnidra was expert in flattery. Thus, he attracted the celestial girl, who was pleased to accept him as her husband because of his mellifluous words. She enjoyed royal happiness with Agnidra for many years before returning to her abode in the heavenly planets. In her womb, Agnidra begot 9 sons: Nabi, Kimpurusha, Harivasha, Ilavita, Ramyaka, Iranmaya, Kuru, Bhadrashwa, and Ketumala. He gave them 9 islands with names corresponding to theirs. Agnidra, however, his senses unsatisfied, was always thinking of his celestial wife. And therefore, in his next life, he was born in a celestial planet. After the death of Agnidra, his 9 sons married 9 daughters of Meru, named Meru Devi, Patirupa, Ugadamstri, Lata, Ramya, Shyama, Nari, Bhadra, and Deva Viti. We'll just do the Sanskrit and then we can do the word for word. Shishuka Uvacha Evam Pitari Sambriveta Tanusha Nevatamana Agnidro Jambu Dvipo Kashapaja Orashava Dhamma Vekshama Paya Gopayat. Word for word. Shishuka. Shishuka Dev Goswami Uvacha said, Evam, thus, Pitari, when his father Sampavite took to the path of liberation. Tat anushasane, according to his order. Vatamanaha, situated. Agnidraha, King Agnidra. Jambudvipa okashaha. The inhabitants of Jambudvip. Prajaha, citizens. Aurasavat, as if they were his sons. Dhamma, religious principles. Avikshamanaha, strictly observing. Pariyagopayat, completely protected. So today is Shiva's Pandit Disappearance Day. So I'll speak on the verse and at the end I'll say a few words. Translation, Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, after his father, Maharshi Priyavrata departed to follow the path of spiritual life by undergoing austerities. King Adnidra completely obeyed his orders. Strictly observing the principle of religion, he gave full protection to the inhabitants of Jambudweep as if they were his own begotten sons, responsibly. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, after his father, Maharshi Priyavrata, departed to follow the path of spiritual life by undergoing austerities, King Adnidra completely obeyed his order. Strictly observing the principles of religion, he gave full protection to the inhabitants of Jambudweep as if they were his own begotten sons. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. So following the instruction of his father, Maharshi Priyavrata, Maharshi Adnidra, ruled the inhabitants of Jambudweep according to religious principles. These principles are exactly contrary to modern principles of faithlessness. As clearly stated here, the king protected the citizens the way a father protects his begotten children. How he ruled the citizens is also described here, dharma viksha manaha, strictly according to religious principles. It is the duty of the executive head of a state to see that the citizens strictly follow the religious principles. Thus, the Vedic religious principles begin with Varnashram Dharma. The duties of the four Varnas and the four Ashramas. Dharma refers to principles given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the first principle of Dharma, religion, is to observe the duties of the four orders as enjoined by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, according to people's qualities and activities, society should be divided into Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, and then again into Brahmacharis, Grihasthas, Vanapras, and Sannyasis. These are religious principles, and it is the duty of the head of the state to see that his citizens strictly follow them. He should not merely act officially. He should not merely act officially. That means he has to give his feeling into it. No, he just does because he has to do. He should be like a father who is always a well-wisher of his sons. Such a father strictly observes whether his sons are performing their duties, and sometimes he also punishes them. Just contrary to the principles mentioned here, the presidents and chief executives in the age of Kali are simply tax collectors who do not care whether religious principles are observed. Indeed, the chief executives of the present day introduce all kinds of sinful activity, especially illicit sex, intoxication, animal killing, and gambling. These sinful activities are now very prominently manifested in India. Although 100 years ago, these four principles of sinful life were strictly prohibited in the families of India, they have now been introduced into every Indian family. Therefore, they cannot follow religious principles. So in contrast to the principles of the kings of old, the modern state is concerned only with propaganda for levying taxes and is no longer responsible for spiritual welfare of the citizens. The state is now callous to religious principles. Srimad Bhagavatam predicts that in Kali Yuga the government will be entrusted with Dasyu Dharma, which means the occupational duty of rogues and thieves. This would be the duty of the government, to take on the duty of rogues and thieves. Modern heads of state are rogues and thieves who plunder the citizens instead of giving them protection. rogues and thieves, plunder without regard for law. But in the age of Kali, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, the lawmakers themselves plunder the citizens. The next prediction to be fulfilled, which is already coming to pass, is that because of the sinful activities of the citizens and the government, rain will become increasingly scarce. So gradually there will be complete drought and no production of food grains. People will be reduced to eating flesh and seeds and many good. People will be reduced to eating flesh and seeds, and many good spiritually inclined people will have to forsake their homes because they will be too harassed by drought, taxation, and famine. The Krishna conscious movement is the only hope to save the world from such devastation. It is the most scientific movement, authorized movement for the actual welfare of the whole human society. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjala Shalakaya Chakshu Udmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Guave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manubhishtam Shtapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Datati Swapanantikam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saswati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nivishesha Shunyavadi Pachatiteshtaine Vanshakalpa Turuvyacha Kipasinuvyayvacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Mula. You know how long Priyavate lived? So we know that the Pachetas, they were blessed to live for 1,000,000 years. So even before that, they remembered Krishna's blessing that when you come after enjoying material life, you'll go back to Krishna. So he lived 11 Arbudas. One Arbuda is 100 million years. So 11 times 100 million is 1,100,000,000 years. So one Manu lives about 280 million years because you count the four Yugas 71 times. So about 4,000,071, it's about 280 million. So he went through five Manus, more than five Manus. So that means he went through, lifetime of Brahma is 14 Manus. That means he went through one third of the lifetime of Lord Brahma. You can't hear? You want to say something? You can say. Day. Day, sorry. Not the life, the day. So one day Lord Brahma, 14 Manus. So he's about five Manus, about one third. Thank you. So, Priyavata, he had Bhumandal. So Bhumandal is explained to be, extends itself to the sunshine, and the other side to the stars. So according to modern scientists, the sun shines onto the earth about 93 million miles away. So you can understand Bhumandal to be about the diameter of 93 million miles. Now, Bhumandal is like, so that was Maharaj Priyavata's kingdom for so many millions of years. Now, in Bhumandal, with his chariot, he created seven islands. So these seven islands are considered, because Bhumandal is like a lotus flower, to be the petals. So six of the islands are the petals, and in the middle of the world is Jambudweep. So Maharaj Agnidra, he managed Jambudweep. Jambudweep is not as big, but it's about 100 million or something yojanas. One yojana is about 8 miles. So about 800 million yojanas is Jambudweep. Now it's explained that Jambudweep has 9 islands. So what he did, what Agnidra did, his 9 sons worshipped each one island, and he gave the name of his son to the island. And one is Ilavita Varsha, which is Bharat Varsha, which is the earth, which is at the southmost part of Jambudweep. So you have Bhumandal, about 93 million in sphere, whatever. And then you have Jambudweep, which is one of the seven islands. And in one of the seven, and in these, on Jambudweep, there's nine tracts of land. And Jambudweep is this, the shape of Jambudweep is like the leaf of a lotus. It's round. You have Bhad Vasha, which is where we live. And that's at the southmost part. And Jambudweep is divided, there's two mountains, two vertical mountains and six horizontal mountains. And that makes the surroundings of Jambudweep. So that's what Priyavata was managing, which is Bhumandal. And then he gave to Agnidra Jambudweep, which is one of the seven islands. And then Agnidra gave to his sons one of the islands, one of the nine islands. And each island took the names of one of his sons. And one of the islands is Bhad Vasha, which is Ilavita, which was one of the sons. Now, we see here that Vanashram Dharma is spoken about. Now, Priyavata Maharaj was so heavy that if someone wouldn't follow Vanashram Dharma, people would just flee. They were so scared of him. A little bit like Bhaktisiddhanta when he would walk and he would meet some Mayavadis. When they would walk on the same side, the Mayavadis would go on the other side. They were so scared of him. So Priyavata Maharaj was very, very heavy for Vanashram Dharma. So what he did is he entrusted his son. He told him that you have to take care of your people, like your sons, and you also have to make sure they follow the principles. Now generally when we think of the king taking care of his citizens like the sons, we think like, oh, make sure they eat, make sure they're taken care of. Like when this Brahmin lost all his sons and he went to Yudhishthira and he was complaining, and then Arjuna vowed that if I don't find your sons, I will kill myself, I will throw myself into the fire. So there Yudhishthira promised protection. But here we go further than that. Not only is he protecting his citizens, but he's also making sure that they follow the principles of Vanashram Dharma. So it's not just make sure you eat, make sure you sleep, make sure you have a house. No, I make sure that you have to do what you have to do, like a parent. What does the parent do? He makes sure that the son or the daughter follow what they have to follow so they can grow up properly. So the Vanashram Dharma here is very emphasized. Now in Satya Yuga, which is also Krita Yuga, there's no Vanashram. Because all the living entities, there's only one order. In Satya Yuga, there's only one order of people, the Hamsas. Hamsas are like the swans, because they're all pure devotees. If you're a pure devotee, or you're not in Avaduta, there's no, you don't have to follow the Vanashram Dharma. If you're Jivan Mukta, you're liberated, the Avaduta doesn't follow the principles. He's beyond. He doesn't have to follow. So in Satya Yuga, all the living entities were meditating on the bull on the four legs of religion. Cleanliness, austerity, truthfulness. The four legs that they were meditating on. So they were pure devotees, no need of Vanashram. Now when Treta Yuga came, then Vanashram came out of the body of the Lord. And then people started following. So Vanashram is not different from Krishna. Actually, the difference between animal life and civilized life are those who follow the Vanashram. You have to follow the Vanashram Dharma. And this is, it's like a safety net. You know, when people do a kabasi, you know, they go on one line and there's a net under to protect them in case they fall. So the Vanashram Dharma is like a safety net. Like for example, it's the lady, she cannot go out at night or she cannot go alone outside. But she's protected, because if ever she goes outside, something happens, no one will ever marry her. So there's certain rules, certain regulations that one follows, so they don't commit sin. Vanashram Dharma is there so someone doesn't commit sin. Because if one commits sin, and there's reactions to sin, there's no way to go back to Krishna. One will constantly be entangled into material life, because the reactions of sin will keep him in. So the Vanashram Dharma is there to keep him, so that he doesn't fall down and commit sinful activities. Now an advanced devotee, when he practices Krishna consciousness, he doesn't need that, because he's free from sin. When he practices Krishna consciousness, it destroys all sins, so there's no use for him. to practice Krishna consciousness, to practice Varnashram Dharma. And the talks between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy, so Chaitanya is always asking him, tell me more, and Ramananda is going higher and higher and higher. And then at one point he tells about Varnashram Dharma. He said, no, tell me more. And then he quotes 927, Yat Karoshi, this verse where whatever you do, you should do it for me. So what he did, he took the Varnashram, but he used it as the goal for Krishna consciousness. The Varnashram remains. Prabhupada gives the example of Murari Gupta. Murari Gupta was Hanuman, right? So he was a physician. So he did his job as a physician. He worked as a physician. So it's explained that he pleased his family and he pleased Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at the same time by doing his duty. So there's one, I don't know if you remember, in the first chapter here, there's a description of Daivi Varnashram Prabhupada is describing here, which is what Bhaktisiddhanta emphasized. So Prabhupada says that because when Prabhupada came, he had to marry his disciples. So obviously people criticize because you're a sannyasi, why are you marrying your disciples? So Prabhupada says that sometimes we are criticized because although I am a sannyasi, I have taken part in the marriage ceremonies of my disciples. It must be explained, however, that since we have started this Krishna consciousness society, and since a human society must also have ideal marriages to correctly establish an ideal society, we must take part in marrying some of its members, although we have taken to the path of renunciation. This may be astonishing to persons who are not very interested in establishing Daivi Varnashram. The transcendental system of four social orders and four spiritual orders. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, however, wanted to re-establish Daivi Varnashram. In Daiva Varnashram, there cannot be acknowledgement of social status according to birthright. Because in Bhagavad Gita it is said that the determining consideration are guna and karma, guna karma vibhakshaha, chaturvanyam, one's qualities and one's work. It is the Daivi Varnashram that should be established all over the world to continue a perfect society for Krishna consciousness. And then Prabhupada says, this may be astonishing to foolish critics, but it is one of the functions of a Krishna conscious society. Because there's a lot of times, there's a lot of discussion, what do we do Varnashram? Because at the same time we devotees, we chant Hare Krishna, we just have to chant. And it's true, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pushed onto the chanting and the service attitude. But the principle here is that unless one is totally pure, then he has to follow certain rules and regulations. And like Murari Gupta, which was totally liberated, but still, he took his profession, he stayed a devotee, that means he chanted, he did whatever he had to do as a devotee, and at the same time, according to his nature, he practiced Krishna consciousness. That was the Daivi Varnashram Dharma that Prabhupada says should be established. Like Arjuna was a fighter. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that when Arjuna tells Krishna that I'm not going to fight, Krishna is telling him that if you don't fight here and you become a beggar, when you become a beggar and you see another beggar fighting with another beggar, you start fighting to protect them because that's your nature. So why don't you just fight here instead of fighting with the beggars? Because that's his nature. So the principle is that whatever nature one has to be used in Krishna consciousness, because Varnashram Dharma comes from Krishna directly. So it has to be there to please Krishna. And unless one pleases Krishna, then the Varnashram Dharma is useless. But until one is still under the modes of material nature, one has to follow the principle of Varnashram. Now because in the Varnashram Dharma there's some principles which are in passion, for people who are in passion and ignorance, some of these regulations may contradict the principle of devotional service. Prabhupada says one has to follow the Varnashram Dharma in relationship with the guru and senior devotees. Then one can understand how to practice the Varnashram principle within a Krishna conscious society. So in the same way that Agnidra is making sure that the Vanashram Dharma is being followed so that the citizens may be protected. Also in ISKCON, like Prabhupada says, that Vanashram Dharma is also one pillar, one item that has to be established. The leaders have to establish, we have to establish a system by which people can fit according to their nature to different molds. And then according to that, one can practice Krishna consciousness and feel peaceful. There is a statement from Prabhupada that says that not everyone will be Krishna conscious. It's not that everyone's going to chant Hare Krishna, everyone's going to surrender. It's not possible. It's not going to happen. I don't know if you ever met when you preach, sometimes you tell people, just say Krishna. They can't even say it. I don't know if you met that. You tell them, just say Krishna, Krishna. They can't say it. They're not going to say it. The karma is so heavy, the sinful reaction is so heavy, they can't even say it. So unless you create a system by which they can be embraced, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he flooded the world with love. And then Nityananda took the heads of people and put them under the water to make sure they drank it. Because the Mayavadis, they were floating on the ocean of love. So Nityananda, more merciful, he came and took their heads and put it down underwater. So you have to create this net, this safety, this protection. And when one comes to the stage of pure devotion, still one practices Vanashram. For example, like Prabhupada, he married his disciples. One may say, what's the use? You're preaching pure devotion. Yes, but they're not pure devotees. They're not going to remain brahmacharis. If they're not married, they're going to do foolish activities. And they'll mingle and they'll do foolish activities. So better I marry them in Krishna consciousness based on the Vanashram principles. So that's the second point that we see, is that Agnidra was making sure that all the living entities in his kingdom would follow the proper principles so they could make spiritual advancement. Now, you know, when Dhritarashtra wanted to kill the Pandavas, he tried to kill them, right? To put his son on the throne. Now, it was never seen before that one king would be killed or murdered. Now, if you look in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, there's all the dynasties of Kali Yuga. And there's King Pu, who had 20 sons. And one son was Purushaya. And Purushaya was killed by his minister. So his son would become the king. And if you go down more and more into the line, there's different types of kings. And one type of king, the Kanvas, his servant killed him. His name was Bali, and he became the king. So these things are only seen in Kali Yuga. So when it's a rainy season, like it's raining, now it's not raining that much, but we expect that during the rainy season there'll be floods, people will die. Like in North India, so many people are dying, so many things are being destroyed, but no one is surprised, it's the rainy season. It's like I was brought up, big part of my youth in Quebec. Quebec is in Canada, in the east side. So there was so much snow, one day we got caught in the school, there was so much snow, the bus came to get us, but we had to sleep in the school. And the next day, there was so much snow, the army tanks, they came to pick up the children. So much snow was there. But there's no surprise, it's winter. So that we should never be surprised by Kali Yuga, what happens. And that's why Prabhupada said that don't be surprised. When people fall down or when people do crazy things, you should be surprised that they don't do. Because this is Kali Yuga. It's the nature of Kali Yuga, which is destruction. Even in the 60s, Prabhupada spoke about it in a conversation about a restaurant in New York, and they're eating fetuses. That was 1960. Eating fetus, babies. Huh? Prabhupada explains. So that is, and Kali Yuga is only starting. Now we know, Prabhupada says there is only one hope, which is Krishna consciousness. So again, the example of Quebec, when this winter, just in the beginning of winter, there's 3 or 4 days where it becomes really hot. It's like summer again. You're thinking, wow, summer came back. And the stronger these 4 days of summer are, the stronger the winter will be. So these 4 days are like these 10,000 golden age of Krishna consciousness. That within Kali Yuga, the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will emanate. and people will see the summer of Krishna consciousness. That's why it's explained that that's the only hope. Prabhupada says the only hope is Krishna consciousness. So in the same way that Parikshit Maharaj was stalling Kali Yuga, Parikshit Maharaj was quite powerful and he pushed Kali Yuga quite a bit. Obviously Kali Yuga defeated him because it's Kali Yuga. So Krishna consciousness can stall. We can stop Kali Yuga for some time, at least for 10,000 years. Bhaktisiddhanta explained that when he speaks about Vasudev Dutt, you know, Vasudev Dutt was asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for a favor. He told him that, give me that favor. And Chaitanya said, what do you want? He said, no, you give it to me first. So he said, I want you to liberate all these people in the universe, all the living entities, and I'll take their karma, I'll suffer. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so much feeling so touched that you're ready to take the sinful activities, suffer for them. You don't need to do this. So Bhaktisiddhanta explains that this is a selfless love of Krishna, of a Vaishnava, that he's ready to suffer for everyone to be liberated. So this is the hope. Our hope is for us to develop the selfless love. That means that first we save ourselves. Sometimes we see devotees, they preach, they manage, but they don't save themselves. So it's not possible to save someone if you can't save yourself, because you're drowning yourself. A drowning man cannot save another drowning man. It's not possible. So the first thing is to save ourselves. And the second is to remember the debt that we have to Prabhupada in ISKCON. Without Prabhupada in ISKCON, we would be nowhere. There would be no Krishna consciousness, there would be no spiritual advancement. We would not be here. If Prabhupada did not do his sacrifice, then we wouldn't be here. In the same way, if all these advanced devotees in ISKCON did not give up material life, we wouldn't be here. It's because one has sacrificed for us that we are where we are. So we also need to sacrifice so other people will come to the point where we can be now today. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was saying that there's so many fruits of love of God, but how can I distribute them alone? It's explained that there's a warehouse, and in this warehouse there's a lot of fruits, the fruits of love. But the difference between this warehouse and another warehouse, generally a warehouse, you take the stuff out, then it becomes empty. But the warehouse of love is the more you unpack the fruits, the more it fills up. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, I'm a gardener, how am I going to take care of all this? Who's going to help me? And this is our duty. It doesn't mean that you abandon families and you don't preach, you don't take care of your duty. Everything has to be done within the rules and the regulations. But it means that we have to make our hearts soft, para dukkha dukkhi. And the materialist is para sukha dukkhi. He enjoys. Like in Shiva's story, there's the story of this maidservant. Her name was Dukkhi. Huh? You know that story? So Dukkhi was bringing all the Ganges water. So once Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked, who brings all this water? He asked Shivas. And Shiva said, it's Dukkhi, the maidservant. And he changed her name. He said, your name should be Sukhi. Because chanting and Krishna consciousness brings happiness. So the devotee is part dukkha dukkhi. He suffers on the suffering of others. Like if you see someone physically destroyed, he can't walk, he's crippled, then we feel bad for them. But because many times our spiritual advancement is not that high, we cannot see the suffering of others. If they're not in Krishna consciousness, they are suffering. I don't know if you remember this discussion between the police chief in Chicago and Prabhupada. So he wanted to know, how can you help crime? So Prabhupada says that you have to give them Krishna consciousness. And then he asked, okay, are you going to start with the poor or the rich? He said, we don't make such difference. Because everyone is suffering. It's not you poor, you rich. Everyone who does, and even we suffering, to the level that we not Krishna conscious, we suffer. Like when Shiva's Pandit's son died, he told the woman, don't cry. Because if you cry, you're going to disturb Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime, his Leela. I don't want that. And if you continue, I'm going to give up my life in the Ganges. Oh, the ladies got scared. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued his Leela. And at one point he felt there's something wrong here. So he asked the ladies, he says, well, Shiva's Pandit, only son died. Huh? You didn't tell me? Oh, I didn't want to disturb you, my lord. So then he brought back the son to life. He made him speak. But after that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started weeping. That Shivas, you are such a devotee, my devotee. Just to please me, you gave up your son. Like when Durvasa Muni was traveling all around the universe, the Chakra was running after him. He went to Lord Narayan. He said, no. He said, the devotee is in my heart. I'm in the heart of the devotee. The devotee gives up his families. He gives up everything. How can I give him up at any time? It's not possible. The devotee is in the heart of the Lord. So dear. So he was, Shiva's, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was weeping that how you have given up your son like this just so to please me in that sense. So that should be our attitude. It doesn't come overnight, but we have to develop this, make the heart soft. When we don't feel for the pain of others, when we become proud of our austerities, when we become envious, it means the heart is hard, the heart. So by making the heart soft through the practice, then we can start feeling. And when we see people coming, we feel we want to give them Krishna consciousness, we want to make them advance, we want to give it to our families, we want to give it to others, we want to speak together about Krishna consciousness, we want to share. And this way the heart becomes soft. And that is the duty, because that's the only hope. Without Krishna consciousness, there's no hope. And for 10,000 years, we have this chance to stop Kali Yuga, to stop the suffering of others, and to liberate as many souls as we can. It's like when you have a ship and it's sinking, you're trying to get as many people as possible. So in Kali Yuga, everything's sinking. You know, people will be short, they'll have babies to eat them because there's nothing to eat. I mean, it's horrible. Kali Yuga is like a horrible place. So we have, so 432,000, 5,000 have passed, 427, 10,000 years. So 417,000 will be left to degrade. Again, more and more and more until Kalki comes and just destroys everyone. And here we go again with Satya Yuga. So the only hope is really what Prabhupada gave us. And because the austerity and the sacrifice of Prabhupada, the sacrifice of senior devotees, and our sacrifice, then others also can make spiritual advancement. So just to summarize, this is the second chapter of the fifth canto, where the whole fifth canto is Maharshi Priyavata's dynasty. So Agnidra's descendants, nine, and you'll see one of his sons is Nabi, and Nabi had Rishabhadev. So here, Agnidra was given Jambudweep, and Jambudweep was divided in nine land, tracts of land, given to his sons. And Agnidra followed the principle of his father to give, to make sure that his citizens would follow the Vanashram system. So even in ISKCON, we need this Daivi Vanashram. That means that everyone should be situated based on their natures. And then based on the natures, they can feel peaceful and they can practice Krishna consciousness. Because it's very difficult to, I remember when I joined, this girl joined with me, and she tore all the social cards, health cards, everything she tore. She said, I'm finished, I'm going. I'm surrendering. But 4 years later, she applied for the cards again. Because in the beginning, like when you have indigestion, you don't want to eat anymore. So it's easy not to eat. But when the indigestion goes away, then the desire to eat comes back. It's natural. So at that point, if we don't have the proper understanding or the proper support, we go back to mature life. That's why it's Bhoga Tyaga, Bhoga Tyaga. The Nectar Devotion says, renunciation, enjoyment, renunciation, enjoyment. You see this in the explain also by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. We think, okay, today I'm going to get up at 1 o'clock. And then 5 days later, it's like my sister, when she does diet, 5 days salad, 5 days chocolate, 5 days salad. So she's determined, I'm going to... So same thing, we have to renounce based on our spiritual advancement. And that is done when there's a system. Because if there's no system, what is going to support us? And that's a Daivi Vanashram system to support us. Okay, Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu.
said that with Sachi Yuga, all of the pure Buddhas. Why? When you said in Sachi Yuga that all the devotees are pure devotees, then why are there still souls in this material world? Why don't they all go back to Krishna and Sachi Yuga?
Yeah, but they fail as the living entities come in, more come out. It's like all the liberated soul that Vasudev Dad asked to liberate, as they come out, more come in. It's not that it's limited to a certain number of souls, and you're only seeing one universe. It's definitely easier, and that's why in Satya Yuga they're very happy for they say Kali Yuga is so easy compared to other ages. All you have to do is chant Hare Krishna. Other questions or comments? Thank you very much, Augusta Prabhupada.